In Recovery by Festive Ferret, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Excuse me? Tony Mock cleaned his ear. I what? Fury sighed, like this was the last conversation he was hoping to have that morning. You technically have ownership rights to Captain Rogers' body. How is that possible? He was Shields before he died. How could anything pass to me? Well, Fury rustled a few papers. He wasn't Shields, actually. Before Project Rebirth, Steve Rogers was a ward of the state as an unbonded Omega with no family. When he signed on to the project, the expectation has always been that his ownership was transferred to the Army, but it wasn't. At Rogers' request, demand, really, his ownership was given to Abraham Erskine. No one really knows why, but the paperwork is clear as day. The Army never owned him, though it was pretty clear Agent Carter was going to petition for him. They were quite obviously courting. She never had the chance to. This still doesn't explain why anyone thinks he's mine. Surely everything of Erskine's transferred to his own family. He had none left. He left his meager savings, a small house upstate, and his books to a few charities. He left his scientific journals, notes, patents, findings, and projects to his lab partner. That included his little lab rat. Oh my God, Dad. Fury shrugged. I guess he figured the only one who could possibly continue his work was Howard Stark, and he didn't want the Army in charge of that. Though Howard was instrumental in founding S.H.I.E.L.D., he left nothing in his will to the organization. Howard owned Rogers when the plane went down. When Howard died, his ownership passed to his closest alpha relative. He gestured at Tony. It never came up before because no one expected Rogers would ever be found, but he has been. Wow. Tony rolled that around in his mind. On one hand, he'd sworn to himself he'd never take possession of an Omega. On the other hand, it was fucking Captain America. Plus, he was dead. Tony's only involvement in the process would be signing some forms to allow S.H.I.E.L.D. to take the samples they were no doubt itching to take, and arranging an appropriate eternal resting place for the super soldier. For someone who is both a scientist and a Cap fan, it was really quite the honor. Plus, it meant if the media ever bugged him about never taking an Omega, he could say he had. But he had sadly passed. Win-win. He's miraculously well-preserved. Fury continued, either not noticing or not caring about Tony's churning thoughts. We'll need your approval to start the thawing process. Right, of course. Yeah, I can sign things. Tony paused. Old comic book covers flipping through his mind. Can I see him? Fury tipped his hand up. He's yours. You can do whatever you want. Fury hadn't been lying. He was miraculously well-preserved. Tony remembered the beautiful face from old newsreels and photographs. His body was frozen solid, but with Tony's approval, they'd already started the process to thaw him. Completely covered from head to foot in a protective paper suit, Tony hung back in the corner of the room and watched S.H.I.E.L.D. science team buzz around him. Tony found himself entranced by the beauty of Roger's face, and he circled the outside of the room to get a better look. As his skin warmed, it shifted from ashen gray to the palest yellow, and it almost looked as if life was being breathed back into him. The ice had captured him in exactly the moment Tony's father would have known him, apparently owned him no less. Young, blonde, long lashes spread over defined cheekbones. Tony circled around to the other side. He was still in the Captain America suit, red, white, and blue, faring in the freeze, almost as well as Rogers himself. Tony knew the chemical design for the suit's fabric like the back of his hand. He'd memorized it as a child, back when his father's work was the most astonishing thing in the world, to a little kid who just wanted to be special enough to be noticed. The lashes fluttered. Tony did a double take. They hadn't just moved, had they? It was the air circulation in the room. Or maybe Tony had been staring so hard his eyes had flickered. He started to say at the exact moment that one of the techs jerked backwards with a shout, "He moved!" Tony had managed to stay in the room until the heart monitor had been pressed over Roger's unmoving chest and the slightest beat had been detected. After that, all hell had broken loose, and someone had noticed Tony was still there and ushered him out. Technically, Tony had medical proxy power to make all decisions relating to Roger's care, but he wasn't actually sure if he wanted to be there while the team tried to revive him. There was simply no way the man's brain was still functioning, and in many ways, it would be rather unseemly to get Roger's breathing, heart beating, living again, only to waste away without higher functions. 18 hours later, Tony was proven wrong for what felt like the 30th time that day. "Hi," he said. And Captain Steve Rogers, born July 4th, 1918, blinked up from the hospital bed and croaked back a rough, "Hi," of his own. "My name is Tony Stark," Tony continued. S.H.I.E.L.D. had recommended several different options for slow reintegration, but if Steve Rogers was anything like the man written about in the history books, Tony had no doubt he'd see right through them all. No, he'd opted for honesty, and he'd opted to do it himself. S.H.I.E.L.D., having no rights, couldn't stop him, though they sure as shit had tried.
"Stark," Steve frowned. "Howard had a brother?"
Tony took a step closer. "No, but he did have a son. You crashed the Valkyrie into the North Atlantic in 1945, and I was born in 1970. Steve was remarkably impassive as that information sunk in, but Tony watched his eyes skitter around the room as he took in Tony's clothes, the flat-screen TV, the lock pad by the door, and the glowing LCD screen on the thermostat. "What year is it now?"
"2012. April 26, 2012. You were frozen for 68 years, found 2 days ago. We all thought you were dead. But as you were thawed, it became clear you were still alive."
"Oh," Steve said flatly.
"Okay."
"You probably want to be left alone to rest," Tony said, starting for the door. But Steve sat up and swung his legs over the side of the bed. To his credit, he didn't look like a man who needed to rest. He looked like a mint-conditioned vintage Ken doll, fresh out of the packaging. If Tony stayed up 2 hours too late, he looked like he'd gone 3 rounds with Rocky Balboa. Steve had spent 7 decades as a TV dinner and looked like an airbrush lingerie model.
"Tony Stark," Steve said shrewdly, "Howard's alpha son. That means I belong to you."
Tony blanched. "I mean, technically, yes. That's why I'm the one here. No one else will come in until we've talked, but you know, it didn't really matter when you were a corpsicle. Now it kinda does. I'm a zillionaire, though, so it's no trouble to get a lawyer to write everything up for a transfer, unprecedented circumstances and all that." Steve's face contorted with emotion for the first time.
"A transfer?" he asked.
"To who?"
Tony shrugged.
"To S.H.I.E.L.D., I guess? To the government?"
"No."
Steve cut his hand through the air. "No, I won't belong to them."
"Okay."
Tony hovered in place, not sure what to say or do next. Steve's gaze dropped to his lap, where his hand twisted together in a knot.
Is there anyone left who knows me? Is Peggy alive?"
There was a glimmer of hope in his voice, and Tony hated to crush it.
Yes, but," he cleared his throat,
"she might not remember you," he explained softly, "and no judge would accept her signature on transfer documents, not now."
"Oh," Steve repeated.
Everything was quiet for a long time. Then he looked up and met Tony's eye with a twist of desperation.
"Please keep me."
"What?"
"Please keep me. Don't transfer me."
He stood and took a step towards Tony, not even a wobble.
"I'll do anything you want. I'll bond with you."
Tony's face must have twisted at that, because Steve quickly changed tacks.
"Or you can send me away. Hide me in a cabin somewhere. I don't care. Just don't."
"Okay. Okay," Tony said placatingly. Hands up, palms out.
"Okay, we don't have to decide anything now. Pretty sure any judge worth his salt would make you wait at least 10 days post-thaw, plus a solid medical and psych eval before they'd let me sign anything, anyway. So it's okay. Steve swallowed hard, nodded, then sunk back down on the bed, hands spread over his knees.
There's a thing, though, Tony said.
Yeah? I'm kind of a known personality, a celebrity. I get followed, I get photographed. If the press gets wind of this, it's going to be a nightmare.
Ah, okay.
So you have two options. You can stay here, but that means you have to stay here in SHIELD HQ. No going out, no getting noticed.
Steve tipped his chin up, eyes narrowing.
And the other?
The other is that you come home with me and we show you off right away. SHIELD thinks we should keep your identity on the DL for now. So I'll tell the press I met your family at a function. We made an arrangement, and you're mine now. We say we're seeing how things go, and if it works out, we'll be talking bonding. But for now, we're just getting to know each other. They'll be surprised. I suddenly go from vehemently denying I'll ever take an Omega to bond shopping and buying rights, but...
Tony shrugged. You don't have any other Omegas?
Steve looked a mix of incredulous and suspicious.
Tony coughed. I'm very independent.
It was less than 72 hours before Steve and everything he owned, one star-studded shield, one pair of shield-issued pants, one shield-issued t-shirt, and one pair of shield-issued cotton boxer shorts, were installed at Stark Tower. Tony hadn't really been surprised when Steve had chosen option two. For an army boy, he was surprisingly anti-government, it seemed, or at least... He made it clear at every given opportunity that he preferred Tony over SHIELD, even though he didn't know Tony from Adam. Tony's mother had tried to train him to one day have Omegas of his own, but her lessons had done more to turn him off the practice than prepare him for the responsibility. The average Alpha took two or three and bonded with one, but Alphas at Tony's tax bracket were more likely to have upwards of 20 and even bond more than once. So much of what Maria did as Howard's bondee was manage and care for the rest of Howard's Omega ownerships, and she schooled Tony in choosing his bondee wisely. They should be someone capable of handling that level of responsibility and organization, someone classy and poised, but confident and level-headed.
Tony spent much of his early days trying to reconcile what would please his mother with what he really wanted, which he'd come to realize was nothing like her plan for him.
It was actually Captain America himself, in a way, who had first turned Tony off the idea, if he was honest. He'd never known Cap was actually his father's property, but he knew he was Erskine's. His was a seminal case in ownership law. In school, every kid learned of the feisty little Omega who loved his country so much that he decided working in the munitions factory wasn't enough for him and followed his Alpha best friend to war. Omegas weren't technically allowed to serve, which also meant that those who had weren't considered veterans. But the American government accepted rights transfers and took on disposed Omegas as wards of the state and could put them to work doing whatever it wanted. In wartime, for a lot of Omegas, that meant going overseas. For Steve Rogers, that meant being a guinea pig for experimentation into human augmentation. Tony had always assumed that the stories were somewhat sensationalized, and Steve's position had meant he'd been forced to submit to the testing of dangerous technologies. But now that Tony knew him, he was starting to think the story of sheer stubbornness was likely closer to the truth. Captain America had died for his country, and America had honored him as a war hero, decorating him posthumously with awards usually reserved for Alphas. Tony had certainly been half in love with Cap through his whole childhood, but the message he received from those around him was that Cap was representative of the Alpha's failure to keep things stable for those they protected. A country at peace had happy, docile, gilded Omegas, cleaning house and making babies. A country at war doped up their stubborn, angry, reckless Omegas until they were violent and angry.
It was Tony's job to provide the cushion of luxury upon which his pampered jewel of a bondee would sit, soft and happy,
and unbothered by the stresses of international politics and humanitarian crises.
But that wasn't what Tony wanted. When he hit puberty and went through his first false rut, it wasn't a jewel he pictured, it was iron. He liked the strong-willed, fierce protector. He wanted the Omega that had given the middle finger to society and stood up for what he believed in. So Tony had given up on the idea of acquiring Omegas at all, figuring he'd be rubbish at taking care of them, and they'd have little to offer him in return. And then his parents died. Jarvis, too. And then Obi happened. If there had been any inkling of interest left before then, it was completely snuffed out when he woke from his first nightmare post-Afghanistan, sweat-drenched and shaking, heart pounding faster than a jackrabbit's. He was a mess, broken and bruised and terrified, and he wouldn't bring anyone else into his life. He wouldn't. But of course, just as Steve Rogers had shouldered his way into being Captain America, now somehow he'd shouldered his way into being Tony's Omega. The first 3 days were rough, Tony couldn't lie. He forgot multiple times that he wasn't alone, cranked his music to inhuman levels, then later found Steve on the balcony, white-knuckled as he clutched a book he didn't seem to be making progress on. Tony set up Jarvis to reorganize the way the sound system worked and changed zones and volumes depending on who was where. But recoding that took all night, which meant he slept all the next day and ended up on entirely the opposite schedule to Steve. This whole living with people thing was turning out to be just as frustrating as Tony had expected, but he wanted to do right by Steve, so he was going to try. When Sunday rolled around, Tony was wandering into the kitchen looking for a smoothie, only to find the dinner table set for two, and Steve peering into a large stock pot on the stove. "What are you doing?" Tony asked, wincing as it came out more accusatory than surprised. Steve whipped around, his hand twitching up across his chest and his eyes going wide. It was a long moment before he slowly relaxed. "Tony," he said. "Sorry, I thought you heard me behind you." "I didn't." Tony wasn't sure if he was imagining the pulse pounding in Steve's neck. His scent was sour and fearful, but quickly dissipating. "Sorry," Tony repeated. He looked around. "Are you having company?" Steve's sour scent reappeared, the fear giving way to discomfort. No, it's fine. You don't need to join me. It was a tradition in my house growing up, Sunday dinner. It wasn't just in my house. It was what we were taught in Omega etiquette classes, too. You eat dinner together, and Alpha and their pack, everyone together. He twisted his fingers into a knot. "It's probably incredibly old-fashioned now." "Oh, no, I'd just forgotten. It's not really. A lot of people still do that." Tony rocked up onto his toes, then back down again. "I have a chef, though. You don't need to cook. He stocks the fridge with pre-made stuff twice a week." Steve stared at the pot for a really long time. "That's good," he finally said. "I'm not a very good cook." "Okay, but that smells good, so we should probably..." Tony waved his hand generically. "I don't have anything else to do." Steve's voice was very small, scarily small. "Pardon?" Steve turned unfocused eyes on Tony. "I sat down yesterday at 11 in the morning, and then it was 3 p.m. and I was still just sitting there. I don't have anything else to do. I don't know what to do. I cooked." He frowned. "It's probably really bad." Tony stepped forward, telegraphing his movements, and rested his hand on Steve's arm. It seemed to reboot him somewhat, and he pulled out of the weird haze he'd slipped into. He shook himself slightly, then reached for the carrot peeler. Since when did Tony own a carrot peeler? And started working his way through a pile of carrots. "It smells good," Tony assured Steve. "I'm sure it'll be great." "Thank you." Steve smiled and Tony breathed a sigh of relief. "Can I help?" Thankfully, Steve put Tony to work on the carrots. Peeling was something he could do. It was methodic and hard to fuck up. As they worked, Tony nattered on pointlessly about work, about Jarvis, about anything. and watched Steve slowly unwind piece by piece. The thing was, and maybe it took one to know one, but the thing was that it became pretty clear pretty quickly that Steve wasn't really okay. And in all honesty, it would have been a miracle if he was. But sickness, then war, then death, then reincarnation was a perfect recipe for PTSD. And Steve hadn't escaped unscathed. And to his surprise, Tony found himself wanting to be the one to help him. He had his own fair share of trauma, and he knew it showed up in a myriad of ways. But Steve was his omega. And even though he'd never intended to take one, that still meant something. Tony wanted to help. Dinner was stilted and awkward and more than a little burned, but it was still nice. And Tony assured Steve it was the start of a tradition which earned him a smile. That night, after Steve had gone to bed, Tony started to research. 3 days later, Steve appeared in the doorway to the lab and hovered there uncomfortably for a moment. Tony forced himself to finish his train of thought, writing out notes for where he was planning to go with his design before turning to Steve. "Yeah?" He tried to keep his voice light, but Steve looked like he was on his way to the guillotine. "Can I talk to you about something?" Tony's first instinct was to say no, because Steve looked like talking to Tony about whatever was on his mind was the very last thing in the world that he wanted to do. But he figured it wasn't his place to decide what was best, and nodded. Tony pushed his chair away from his desk and stood, finding a seat on the couch opposite Steve, who had perched on the edge of the coffee table. "So," Steve started, "I was at the doctor this afternoon." Tony frowned. "Everything okay? Is the serum—" "Oh, no, not the shield doctors. My omega doctor." Okay. "And everything's not exactly okay," Steve sighed. Tony's blood ran cold. "Do you need a specialist? I know people. I can get connections who—" "No, no, it's not like that, Tony. I'm not sick. It's—" "Well, the combination of the serum, which was already rough on my body, plus the ice, basically my reproductive system stopped while I was frozen, and it's now pretty definitive that it won't start up again. I can't get pregnant. I won't ever have a heat again." "Oh," Tony let out a relieved sigh. "Oh, I was really worried there for a moment." Steve frowned. Sorry, I mean, not that it's not upsetting." Tony fumbled his words. Steve looked deeply uncomfortable, and Tony couldn't put his finger on why. "Is kids something you—" "What? No, no, of course not. I mean, after everything that's—" "No." "Okay, so you'll miss your heats?" Tony prompted, still not getting it. "I'll—" "No, I mean for you. I know you said you wanted to just see how things went, but I can't—" Steve gestured vaguely. "Be that for you. But I know the press has you in an awkward situation since you've told them you've taken me on, but I'm sure after a few months you can send me away somewhere quiet and they'll give up." Tony sat still and silent for a while and tried to parse through that. "I don't want kids," he managed eventually, "so I don't—" "Heat," Steve said, cheeks flaming pink now. "You're not going to bond with an omega who can't give you a heat." "Why not?" "What? I—" Steve blinked. "Because?" Tony stared at him, genuinely flummoxed. "I don't care about that, Steve. I never even planned to get an omega in the first place." Several emotions flitted across Steve's face, and he landed somewhere that looked like rejection to Tony. "Right. Sorry, I'm—" Tony groaned and pinched the bridge of his nose. "I'm fucking this up." "No," Steve said quickly. "No, it's okay." Tony reached out awkwardly and gave Steve's knee a squeeze. "I'm sorry," he paused. "I'm sorry you got bad news at the doctor. But I want you to know that an omega being able to have a heat or not doesn't matter to me. In the way that, like, I don't need that. I like you as you are. It doesn't change anything for us. We can still just get to know each other." "Because this is all for the press anyway," Steve ventured. Tony let that roll through his mind and realized his hand was still on Steve's knee. He pulled it back. Is it? Steve startled like a deer hearing a twig crack. I mean, it doesn't have to be. I didn't want to risk sullying Captain America's reputation, so I made a rushed decision to have you here. But that means it's out now, that you're mine, so... I mean, what do you want?
What do I want?
Yeah. Steve blinked like the question had genuinely never occurred to him before.
I don't know, he said eventually.
Well, I like having you here, so I'd like you to stay if that's something you'd like. We don't have to talk about bonding. We don't ever have to talk about bonding, but I'm not going to send you away unless you'd like to go somewhere quiet and alone, in which case I have many options. And so, you know, theoretically, if we were going about this more conventionally, and I did want to ask you to bond with me, and you were into that, you not being able to have a heat wouldn't make me want to ask you any less. He let out a sharp breath at the end of the long speech. Does that make sense? Steve was smiling softly now. Yes, that makes sense. Thank you. So, should I fuel up my private jet, or... I'd like to stay, if I'm not in your way. Tony took both knees now, leaning forward. I like you here, honest. Okay, good. That week's Sunday dinner was a little more cheerful and a lot less burnt. 2 days later, Tony caught Steve sitting on the floor in his bathroom, staring into space, and when he lightly touched Steve's arm, he startled, barely catching himself before he whacked Tony's hand away, probably hard enough to break it. There was a long, tense moment when Tony wondered if Steve knew where he was. You okay? Tony asked eventually, and Steve swallowed hard. Tony. Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay. Steve pushed himself up to his feet and bent over the sink. He rinsed his mouth. Tony wondered what he was tasting. Surely it wasn't the putrid water and mouth-coating dust Tony did. He'd be rinsing something else out right now. Ice cream? Tony offered. They walked down the street towards the best ice cream shop, Steve casually maneuvering himself to always be on the car side of the road, even though that should be Tony's place. Tony noticed, but he'd never been one for manners anyway. So he let Steve be where he needed to be, but he wondered. A week later, Steve broke a glass. It wasn't Tony's favorite glass or anything, but it was whipped across the room with the same precise velocity that might be given to a vibranium shield, and it shattered against the wall, showering the carpet in tiny splinters. Tony knew viscerally that Steve had missed him very intentionally. Captain America, even after 70 years in ice, knew how to throw, and the 3 feet that had been between Tony and the glass as it sliced through the air were entirely purposeful. That didn't stop the sudden surge of panic, though, the bitter rush of adrenaline as his body screamed of an impending fight. Steve had cut off whatever rabid rant he'd been halfway through and was gripping the edge of the kitchen counter, knuckles white, the granite all but whimpering under the pressure. I'm just going to... Tony pointed toward the stairs to the workshop, then followed the gesture with his feet, making it all the way through the workshop doors before the shaking started. He ended up working through it, the flow of blueprints and formulas pushing everything out of his mind while his body settled. 4 hours later, Steve came downstairs and sheepishly knocked on the door with 2 plates of spaghetti. He was shiny and damp, wet hair plastered to his forehead, and it was clear by the state of his knuckles he'd worked through his own panic with a punching bag. I'm sorry, he said softly, hovering by the door. Tony pushed up out of his chair and took one of the plates of pasta, nudging Steve towards the couch in the corner. I forgive you. It's hard sometimes, yeah? It hits you all at once like a wave. Steve sighed and half shrugged. The shield therapist says I have a unique situation. But sometimes it feels like that's just an excuse not to have answers for me. I cleaned it up. I know you did. Tony patted Steve's knee and shifted close enough that their shoulders rubbed when Steve dipped his fork in his spaghetti. Everyone's situation is unique. He shrugged too. And we're all human. Steve frowned at his pasta like he might be questioning whether that was really true, so Tony bumped him again. Let's watch baseball. But he was starting to wonder if ice cream, baseball, and punching bags were really going to be enough for Steve after everything he'd been through. It had never really been enough for Tony. What is this place?
I told you, it's a surprise.
Tony steered the car off the road and down a long drive. Steve's face was all but pressed to the window, trying to figure out where they were going. If Tony was being entirely honest, the reason he hadn't told Steve yet was that he was still kind of nervous about whether this was a good idea or not. He had a feeling Steve's initial reaction was going to be negative. But if he gave the idea some space and some thought, he'd come to be excited about it. And this was just a first visit, a consultation. So if he decided it was a no, that was okay. You don't have to make any decisions today, Tony said. I just wanted you to know this is an option. The lane turned and revealed the facility, a sprawling kennel with a main office as a separate building. New York Veterans Assistance Dogs, Steve read off the sign. You're getting a service dog? Actually, the idea is that you'll be getting a service dog. I don't get it. Steve didn't sound mad, just confused. Veteran assistance programs are for alphas only. I don't think Omega Support does service dogs. I arrange for you to get a special exemption, just like you had a special exemption to serve as CAP. SHIELD had no problems making that happen. Like I said, you don't have to make a decision today. Today is just a chance to meet some people, see the place, and see what the dogs can do. What would I need a service dog for? Tony pulled into a parking spot and turned off the ignition. He turned to face Steve. You fought in a war, then got frozen in ice and lost everyone you loved. I think a dog would be good for you, the way it's good for all the other veterans this place gives them out to. Steve chewed on his lip and looked at the facility. Let's just see. It'll be a cool tour no matter what. Plus puppies. That made Steve laugh, albeit a bit nervously, and he unbuckled his seatbelt and pushed the car door open. They were met at the office by a chipper young alpha with a treat bag clipped to her belt, and she led them through the facility, showing them the whelping barns and the training rooms. She explained the process for getting a dog, the training classes they'd have to attend, and how long the process would be, then handed them off to one of the trainers, Mark, who showed them a dog named Bitsy, who was trained to assist with PTSD. She could wake up her handler from a nightmare, remind him to take his medication, stand at his back or lie over his lap if he was feeling anxious. Beyond that, Mark explained, having a loving, non-judgmental companion who also added structure and routine to the day seemed to help a lot of the veterans in their program. Tony tried not to stare at Steve the whole time, but he was desperate to know what he thought. He'd called ahead and talked a bit about Steve's situation, also making sure he had nothing to worry about with them being condescending or dismissive of Steve because he was an Omega. Everyone had been great so far, and Steve seemed at least somewhat interested in the dogs, though it was unclear if it was just because he loved dogs or because he could see the potential benefit in having one himself. The trainers loaded them up with pamphlets and brochures, and then they said goodbye and climbed back in the car. So, Tony started, when Steve didn't say anything right away. Steve fiddled with the edges of the pamphlet. It's a lot of time and money. Money I have in abundance. And weren't you just saying the other day you didn't have enough to do? This would give you a project. What if? Steve said, then he cut himself off sharply. Pardon? Steve looked out the window. What if it doesn't help? His voice was flat, like it wasn't a question, but an inevitability. It was the first time Steve had admitted there was something to be helped. Well, then I've always wanted a dog, Tony said with a shrug. He started the car and twisted it around to back out of the parking lot. What if it does? Steve went back for this personal consultation the next week, and a week later, Tony got a call that he'd been approved. The facility clearly wasn't quite sure how to handle health records for an Omega, especially when so much of his service record was sealed. They knew objectively that Tony was responsible for Steve's health decisions, but their entire system was built to serve Alphas. And there was the inevitable stumble when they asked for Mr. Stark instead of Mr. Omega Stark. Tony found it weirdly comforting that he and Steve were so unconventional to other people. It made the fact that he'd taken an Omega at all feel less weird. Steve did a 3-week course at NYVAD, going in for 4 hours, 3 days a week, to learn about being a handler for a service dog. The puppies that would eventually be going to Steve's cohort were living in foster homes right now, getting initial training, and more than once, Tony got a peek of Steve's phone screen in the evening, only to find him scrolling through the NYVAD foster hashtags on Instagram, looking at all the Labrador and Golden Retriever puppies, and no doubt wondering which one would be his. There was actually a small but immediate change in Steve right away. He'd come back from his training perky and chatty, wanting to seek Tony out and regurgitate everything he'd learned that day for Tony's consumption. For Tony, it was odd. At first, he was excited, but a few days into Steve's course, he found himself getting annoyed at driving him in and picking him up. When he feared it would turn into starting a fight, he claimed a meeting and had Happy take him in the next day, but still didn't feel better. And as he was standing in the penthouse kitchen glaring at his fifth cup of coffee, he realized what he actually was lonely. He missed Steve while he was gone all day. And what did that mean? Tony set his mug down. Damn, I think... He couldn't quite put it in words yet, but he did know that he liked having Steve around, that not having the house empty was a joy he hadn't expected. Well, I'll be fucked, he said, picking up his mug again and taking a sip. He went back to work, and when Steve was done, he went and picked him up himself and listened to every word Steve said on the way back home, rapt. Oh God, what if she doesn't like me? Steve fidgeted in his seat, a mix of anxiety and excitement pouring off him in waves. She's going to love you, Steve. Tony winked at him. You're very lovable. Steve laughed. Thank you. Also, and I might be wrong, I'm pretty sure I got this from TV, but I hear dog's love is pretty easy to buy with food. We could have stuffed your pockets with pizza. That got an even bigger laugh, and Steve relaxed into his seat. Yeah, we should have. He turned to look at Tony, and Tony struggled to keep his eyes on the road. You know, that's a good thing about the future. Pizza. You can just call or, hell, even order it on the internet, and it just shows up at your house. That's amazing. All the different foods I've tried have been amazing. Tony laughed. That's a good one. Got anything else? Steve shrugged. Been some good music. Not all of it, but some. Maybe I should write it down, he mused. They pulled into the parking lot at the NYVAD facility and slotted in among the other cars. Tony was tense already, knowing that Steve would be the only Omega getting a dog that day. But when they stepped into the training room, his anxiety lessened somewhat. The room was full of families, Alphas and Omegas alike, even kids, and Steve clearly recognized a lot of them from his course, waving hello to a few as they found an empty seat in the ring around the outside of the room. Steve had found out last week that the dog he was getting was a girl, but that was all he knew. They waited in rickety plastic chairs while each family was called up and presented with their dog. The first day was just bonding, the dog's handler starting to build the relationship that would fuel the training going forward. Tony had been instructed to give Steve and the new dog space to connect, so when his own name was called, they still weren't sure who they should have on their books, and Steve stood. Tony stayed in his chair and watched. This is Lollipop, the young chipper trainer announced, a small, sleek black lab wiggling her way over to where Steve had crouched down to greet her. Hello, Lollipop, Steve said, stroking the top of her head. The dog licked his hand, managing to wiggle each section of her body at a separate frequency. Tony kept himself off to the side as Steve sat on the floor and the trainer talked to him. Lollipop lay by his side, sniffing his pockets and bumping his elbow for more scratches when he stopped. After a while, Steve took Lollipop's leash and led her over to where Tony sat.
"Isn't she pretty?" Steve asked.
"Gorgeous." Tony reached out to scratch her chin, and she wiggled some more, her tongue falling out of her mouth and her eyes squeezing shut. The rest of the day was mostly training on how the initial bonding period would go. Tony was cautioned to let Lollipop focus on Steve, who would be responsible for her food, exercise, and training practice, especially in the critical first few weeks. But it was also important that Lollipop see him as a safe, kind family member and learn to alert Tony first if Steve needed human assistance, so he'd be involved in the training too. At the end of the long day, they filled the car with all the notes and supplies provided for Lollipop, including her favorite blanket and a small bag of her kibble, and headed back to the city. Steve twisted around in his seat to watch her. Tony glanced in the rear view and found her lying comfortably in the back seat, curious but relaxed. "They must train them to ride in cars," he observed.
"They train them to do everything," Steve pointed out.
"She's probably had more training than I have."
"Certainly more than I have," Steve laughed.
"You might be untrainable, Tony." Tony looked over and caught a twinkle in Steve's eye that made his stomach do an unexpected flip-flop. At home, Jarvis had arranged for an entire PetSmart to be delivered for when they arrived, and Steve spent an entire hour introducing Lollipop, who he was decidedly calling Poppy, Tony had noticed, to all the beds, toys, treats, and blankets he had unpacked for her. They ordered takeout burritos, everyone being too exhausted to cook, and ate them on the couch, with Poppy lying flat on her side across Steve's feet, snoring softly. Steve smiled down at her.
"Thank you, Tony," he said earnestly.
"Anything for you," Tony said, realizing as the words came out of his mouth that they weren't as pro forma as he was expecting. He really meant it. Training Poppy was a mix of fascinating, rewarding, and frustrating. Steve, of course, did most of the work, but Tony came to every other training session and tried to learn right alongside him. Poppy learned to wake Steve up from a nightmare, nudge him with her nose insistently if he started to get too agitated, lie across his lap during panic attacks, and lick his face if he zoned out for too long. She had also previously been trained to fetch medicine bottles when cued by triggers like her hand getting up in the morning or going to bed at night. But since medicine didn't work on Steve, he requested that they teach her instead to bring him one of her toys each morning so he could start the day with a smile. A routine was naturally born. Steve would get up in the morning and take Poppy for a run. Then he and Tony would eat breakfast together before Tony went to work, and Steve went to do the various things he did. It was a slow change, but Tony noticed that now that he had Poppy, Steve ventured out more than he had before. Happy acted as a chaperone when Tony couldn't, but Steve drew Tony out more too, Poppy on her leash between them, walking so close beside Steve that her fur rubbed against his khakis. Tony was starting to realize more than a little reluctantly that he quite liked having an Omega on his arm after all. Events were easier to bear with Steve beside him, meeting his gaze with a subtle eye roll whenever some obnoxious senator was being ridiculous, saving the best hors d'oeuvres for Tony when he was on stage giving a speech, and feigning that delicate Omega flush that meant Tony could bail early without any hard feelings from the other alphas at the party. It was nice, too, when it was just the two of them and Poppy, exploring the city, figuring out which foods of the future Steve liked best, and listening to Steve's stories about all the alleys he was beaten up in while he was supposed to be learning to cook and clean and mend socks.
"Your poor mother," Tony exclaimed, laughing, while Steve pointed up a now heavily gentrified apartment building he'd once lived in and described the best way to sneak down the old fire escape.
Steve shrugged, chuckling too. His hand found Poppy's head and scrubbed through the fur around her ears.
"I was a handful. Still am."
"Still are," Tony acknowledged.
"Guess a handful is what I was looking for."
Steve startled at that, his eyes going wide and settling on Tony. The quiet moment stretched between them for a long while. until Steve took a breath and set off walking again, Tony falling in beside him. It was getting harder and harder to see his attachment to Steve as purely platonic. Tony hummed and twisted the holographic blueprint to the left, then to the right. It wasn't perfect. If he just... God damn it! Steve's voice cut through the quiet of the workshop and was followed by the dull thud and sharp tinkle of a sketchbook and a pencil hitting the floor. Tony spun his chair around to see Steve sitting on the floor with his back against the couch, Poppy fully in his lap, her tail wagging, alternating between pressing her face against his chest and licking his hand. Tony waited, watching, but not wanting to interfere. Poppy flopped down across Steve's legs, radiating affection, and Steve finally reached out and started petting her flank with one hand, his breathing slowing from frantic to ragged. Tony stood and slowly crossed the workshop, making sure Steve had heard him approach before he sat beside him. You okay? Steve nodded, petting Poppy with both hands now. They were quiet for a while. Sometimes my new hands feel too big. Like I can't hold the pencil the right way. Can't get the shapes right. I don't mind being strong and healthy. It's hard to complain about that. But it's my hands that get me. They don't feel like mine. As if she'd read his mind, Poppy started licking his fingers again, and Steve chuckled softly, rubbing her ears. Her urgency had settled, as his emotions had, and now it felt more like a cuddle than a trained reaction. I can't imagine what that feels like, though I do understand feeling weird about changes to your body, not just because I'm getting, God, so old. Steve laughed. You're not old, Tony, but also because of the reactor. He tapped it. I used to be able to breathe deeper, move more easily, sleep better. I touch my chest sometimes, expecting skin instead of glass. It feels like someone else's body sometimes. Steve hummed in agreement. Yeah, we're a couple of messes, huh? Hot messes, Tony corrected, liking the way Steve had said, couple. Steve laughed. Okay, Poppy. He patted her, then pushed to get up. Thanks, honey. Tony stood too, but found himself reluctant to move out of Steve's space. You know, I never saw it as anxiety, Steve said, before all this dog training stuff. They told me she would be triggered by my anxiety to help me calm down, but I'd seen it as anger, frustration, and just being broken, but never as anxiety before. I don't know why that makes it easier, but it does. I'm here all day for anything that makes it easier for you. Steve met his eyes. You do. Thank you, Tony. He sort of flinched, but towards Tony instead of away, and Tony thought, what the hell, why not? And reached out and drew Steve into a hug. To Tony's surprise, Steve didn't tense or pull away. Instead, he melted immediately into the hug, letting out a soft sigh. Up close like this, Tony could smell the sweet aura of Omega pheromones hanging on Steve's skin, and he couldn't help but breathe him in. Steve couldn't always bring Poppy everywhere with him, and one of the places he couldn't was to Peggy's grandson's house. He visited the young Omega, who had moved to D.C., once or twice a month, and had managed to slot into somewhat of an uncle role. Since it was an Omega calling on another Omega, Steve didn't need a chaperone, and Peggy's grandson was violently allergic to dogs, so Poppy was always left at home. She wasn't thrilled about it. Tony suspected that Poppy was completely convinced that Steve was quite hopeless and wouldn't be able to take care of himself without her around, but it was important for her that she manage on her own at the apartment, even if it was kind of tragic, seeing her pouting in her dog bed, eyes fixed on the front door. Tony always added a few extra treats to her bowl those days. Today, however, dog cookies were the farthest thing from his mind. He'd been in the shower washing off 2 hours of auto grease when suddenly the bathroom fan had clicked off and the room had been plunged into darkness. The water continued to pound down on him, losing a few degrees of warmth as the instant water heater went offline. The dark and the cold wet shot Tony back to the cave, electricity sparking off in his chest where the wound still wept. Tony stumbled sideways and gripped the metal handle under the row of shampoo bottles.
Jarvis?
His voice was shaky, and his feet suddenly felt slippery on the tile.
Jarvis?
There was no answer. Tony's heart pounded in his chest, and his breath was wet and short. He stumbled his way out of the shower stall and groped around in the dark until he got his hand on his phone, still charged. He pressed his thumb to the print scanner.
Jarvis?
Yes, sir, the AI replied. I seem to have lost power in the penthouse.
But the building reactor?
It's still functional and online. The issue is in the coupling. I believe there's been a connection erosion on the 19th floor. The majority of the tower still has power. Only the penthouse is out.
Do we suspect any foul play?
No, sir. We suspect a family of pigeons nesting in a particular electrical box in the basement of the tower. He paused. So, in one sense, yes, we suspect foul play.
Har har,
Tony pushed out. But neither the assurance that he was safe nor the comforting voice of Jarvis was enough to break the down spiral of anxiety the flashback had pushed him into. He found his clothes on the bed by feel and pulled them on with shaky hands, though his t-shirt was probably on backwards. Tony crumpled to the floor, his back against the side of his bed, and clutched a hand over his chest. He tried to breathe into his hand, tried to feel the expansion of his chest, but the air he pulled on didn't seem to have anywhere to go. Tears that were a mix of fear and frustration built up behind his eyes, but he squeezed them shut to stop any from falling. The lights suddenly clicked back on, but Tony couldn't see the bedroom anymore anyway. All he could see was dirt and dust and blood and fire.
All you have to do is breathe, he told himself.
But he could taste filthy water and the metallic buzz of adrenaline, and his heart was beating too fast, way too fast. Something bumped Tony's hand, and he recoiled, eyes springing open, only to find Poppy next to him, flat on her belly, nudging at Tony with her nose.
What?
Tony asked her. Poppy inched forward and bumped him again. Tony let out a long, tight breath as he realized Poppy's training had kicked in, and even though he wasn't her charge, she hadn't been able to stand idly by and let him have a panic attack.
You're not here for me, Tony reminded her. Don't you have an Omega to take care of?
She shuffled even closer, her side pressed up against his, and Tony remembered that Steve wasn't even in the apartment. Tony let out another breath, which eased some of the pain in his chest, and stretched his legs out long in front of him. Lollipop took the opportunity to climb up into his lap. Still long and flat, she merely draped herself over him like a blanket. Tony put a hand on her back.
He's okay, Tony assured her, as if she was the one having a panic attack. He'll be home soon, and then you can go back to taking care of him.
Tony started stroking her, his hand moving rhythmically with the in and out of her breath, and his own breathing started to match after a moment. He let his eyes close and focused on the way her fur felt between his fingers. There hadn't been anything like that in the cave. Nothing soft. Tony wasn't sure how much time had passed when he heard the front door of the penthouse open and close. Poppy lifted her head, ears perked. But instead of immediately trotting off to find Steve, which Tony had been sure she would do, she whined, staying heavily sprawled across Tony's lap, but clearly torn.
You can go get him, Tony said. It's okay.
But before her desire to see Steve overtook her instinct to stay with Tony, the door to the bedroom creaked open and Steve's head poked in.
Are you taking a nap?
He asked softly.
Oh.
Tony couldn't look up, in case there were tear tracks on his cheeks, so he kept his gaze fixed to Poppy as Steve slid to the floor beside them. Poppy's tail thudded loudly on the floor, and she scuttled over so she was half across Steve's lap and half across Tony's. Everything was quiet save for their breathing and the soft whack of Poppy's tail for a long, long time.
I was in love with Peggy, Steve finally said softly. That's why I wouldn't let the army take my rights.
I demanded Erskine sign for me himself, if he wanted me for his experiments so badly. I'd been ready to give them up, you know. Desperate for it, actually. I lied about my age, my health, my legal status, just trying to get them to give me a chance. Tony's hand stilled on Poppy's back. But then? Steve smiled softly. But then I met Peg's. And I fell so damn hard, I didn't know which way was up. And the crazy thing was, she liked me too. He sighed and tugged Poppy's ears through his fingers. The army was notorious back then for blocking bonds. They didn't want to transfer rights, and they fought it every chance they got. A solid quarter of the forces back then were Omegas, who had nowhere else to go, and no one else to pay their bills. Though you don't read about that in the history books, they never would have let Pegs and I bond, especially if I worked out as this super soldier they wanted so badly. So when it came to finally signing an ink, I told Erskine I didn't trust them to do right by me. And he talked to whoever he needed to talk to, and he made it happen. And then he died, Tony said. And then he died, Steve agreed with a sad sigh. And ownership went to Howard, which surprised me, to be honest. I didn't know he'd done that. Based on the reactions I got, I'm not sure anyone knew he'd done that, Howard included. But to his credit, he didn't bend when they asked him to sign me over. He said Erskine had given me to him for a reason, and he wasn't going to go against his wishes. Tony waited, but Steve didn't seem to have any more to say. That's why you didn't want me to transfer you to S.H.I.E.L.D. Steve shrugged. I guess, yeah. I mean, even knowing Peggy wasn't... He trailed off. Even knowing that, I still can't help feeling like S.H.I.E.L.D. would just want me for what was pulsing through my veins and not me, you know? Tony nodded. Yeah, I can get that. I'm sorry, though, Steve said. I didn't realize at the time how selfish it was to ask you to take me on when you weren't expecting it. I just assumed you had several Omegas already, and you'd barely notice adding me to the lot. Tony snorted out a laugh. And instead, you got... He waved a hand towards the sad state of affairs he currently was. And instead, I... Steve cut off, and when Tony looked up at him, he was staring back, cheeks pink. I'm glad that this is what I got. I like being here with you. I'm glad, too, Tony managed. Can I ask you a potentially offensive question? You don't have to answer it. Sure, of course. Steve cleared his throat and focused his gaze on the painting hanging over the dresser. Why am I your first Omega? Why don't you have others? Tony's first instinct was to take Steve's out and not answer, but something about the way Steve had said he was glad to be here made him change his mind. I was scared, he admitted. I didn't want to share my life with anyone. I didn't want to trust anyone, only to get hurt. And now? Steve asked, barely a whisper. Tony turned to face him, adrenaline of a different kind flushing through him this time. Now? Now there's only one Omega I want to share my life with, he confessed roughly. Just one. Steve's eyes went wide. He twisted a little, leaning his head against the side of the bed and chewed his lip. It was the way he leaned in, such a small movement that it was probably entirely unconscious, and the way his eyes cut, just for a heartbeat, down to Tony's mouth, that made Tony shift forward, his own lips parting. He kissed Steve, a gentle peck, more a question than anything else. Steve answered by surging at Tony, clutching his face between his hands, and kissing him breathless, desperately. Tony melted into it, letting Steve take the lead. When Steve's lips parted, Tony looked inside his mouth. He gasped in a breath, then dove in for more. But when he shifted forward, something large and furry was suddenly pressed against his chest. He leaned back, Steve going the other way, and Poppy gently but passive-aggressively inserted herself between them. They stared at her. She licked Steve's chin, and he burst out laughing. Well, I guess we'll have to work on that, he said. Tony couldn't wait to start. 9 years later, wakefulness came slowly and gently to Tony. He didn't move from his position on the couch, his body still deeply asleep even as his mind started to come online. There was a heavy weight across his chest, warm and soft, and the light was dimmer and more golden than when he'd laid down to close his eyes for a moment. Poppy, he murmured. The dog responded with a snore, not shifting from where she was sprawled across him. He stroked his fingers through her fur. Retirement suits her, came Steve's voice from above him, and Tony blinked open his eyes to find his bonded smiling down at him. Hey, gorgeous, Tony laughed. Pretty sure she got all A's in napping even before she retired. Well, practice makes perfect. You're aiming for your certification, and you're a few years from retiring yourself. A few years? Ouch. Steve bent over the back of the couch and pressed a kiss to Tony's lips. The kids are all in the playroom. Help me with dinner? Absolutely. Tony wriggled out from under Poppy, who grumbled a bit, then stood and stretched, following Steve and Tony as they headed for the kitchen. Tony yawned and stretched, leaning back against the counter, and Steve's arms snaked around his waist, caging him against the cabinets. Tony slipped one hand up the back of his shirt and pressed his lips to Steve's neck. I love you so much. Tony. Steve tipped his chin up, letting Tony scent him. He found sweet honey and happiness when he breathed in behind Steve's ear. But Steve tried to move away before Tony had had his fill. The kids are hungry. They can wait, Tony protested. What are they going to do, eat each other? Who knows? All right, how about we feed the monsters, Tony said, trailing kisses down Steve's jaw. And then while they're in food comas, we go to our room and make a mess. Steve gave Tony's hips a squeeze. A hot mess? He teased. A few, if we have time. Tony winked. Okay, come on. Steve prepped the meals, and Tony helped him carry all the bowls through to the playroom. As soon as they opened the door, the barking started. Three black lab puppies bouncing up and down, trying to reach their bowls. Calm down, calm down. Steve scolded gently. He waited until they relaxed, their tails spinning wildly, bright eyes fixed on the bowls in their hands. Juniper started drooling, and Jellybean whined softly. Okay, wait. Steve set his two bowls down, and Tony added his. Okay, take it. Juniper and Jellybean dove for their bowls, but Jigsaw just sat there wagging his tail and grinning up at Steve. Jiggy, honey, you can eat now. The pup blinked twice, then stepped forward and sniffed his bowl before digging in. Good dog. I worry about our son sometimes, Tony sighed. Steve laughed. He'll get there. When the puppies were done eating, they swarmed into the apartment to crowd around Poppy, jumping on her and chewing on her ears. She pinned them down and licked their faces until the food hit and they all passed out in a comfy pile. Poppy had taken to being a foster parent as well as Steve had. When she retired, Steve decided not to take another service dog, but instead took on a rotating door of foster puppies for the NYVAD, while Tony worked his political angles to get the program opened up to Omegas as well. Therapy, support, and medication had been good for them both, and Poppy had helped Steve identify his own patterns. But after 8 years, he was happy to retire her and take care of himself. And the puppies, of course. And he and Tony took care of each other, really. With the puppies under Poppy's care, Steve took Tony's hand and guided them towards their bedroom, his warm, loving gaze never leaving Tony's face. The end.